Hey everybody, welcome to the weekly muscle building expert interview series. This is Mike Westerdahl with criticalbench.com, and we've got pro level powerlifter Mike Schwanke on the phone tonight. I actually train with Mike over at Tampa Barbell. Mike competes in powerlifting, as I mentioned, and he's a great guy. He's in the 220 pound weight class, and he's got a ton of records, and we're going to pick his brain tonight. His deadlift is something real amazing. We'll talk about that. I think he's gotten an 800-pound deadlift at 220, so he's got some great deadlifting tips for us, great muscle-building exercise. And as well, we're going to talk about how you can build strength without putting on fat, how you can stay lean and strong at the same time. So welcome to the call, Mike. Thanks for being here. Why don't you give everybody a little bit of background information about yourself?
Well, name's Mike Schwanke. I'm a technical sergeant in the United States Air Force. I've been active duty for about 13 years now and just returned from a seven-month deployment to Iraq. So the 220-pound class more like might be 198-pound class in the future. I don't know, because I've lost a little bit of weight being over there.
Yeah, you don't look much different. You're still looking jacked up.
Well, I think it's just because of the legs. I haven't been working my legs as much because, like I said, I got kind of an ankle injury I got over there. And, you know, a lot of guys will talk to you and say, well, what's the quickest way I can put on weight? And I always tell them in your legs, because it's one of the biggest groups of your body.
Yeah, good tip. Well, you know, we all appreciate you over there serving. We're glad to have you back. How'd you hurt yourself? Was that during training or was that on duty or what happened?
I think it's a combination of things. I had kind of a weird deployment over there. I was working with a department in the state, Army, Navy, and actually going outside the wire, checking out IT centers and political activities and also economics advisors. So I had about 15 runs outside the wire over there and dealing with all kind of facets of life and how the whole scheme of government works.
Wow. Yeah, well, you glad to be back?
Yes.
Yeah, what kind of training were you doing while you were there? What kind of access to equipment did you have?
For being forward deployed on a FOB, you know, it's an Army-run base, but they actually had a lot of stuff. A lot of stuff was donated. Actually, it was kind of funny when they had that Humvee pull. Alan Thomas, I guess, donated a harness to them and stuff, so good on AP for supporting the troops as always.
Yeah, we got a video of your strongman event up on the Critical Bench YouTube channel. You got first place or set a base record on that event?
Yeah, it's kind of funny because, you know, I've never done one of those. I really was kind of going in the blue on this. And the guy who went before me, I think, pulled it like in 57 or 59 seconds, and everybody thought it was over. And I said, I guess I'm going to have to either dig in or just suck this one up. But I actually ended up pulling it in 47, I believe. So it's
awesome.
kind of a shocker for everyone.
So everybody went once, and then after he got that time, everybody just figured he won.
Yeah, you're pulling a up-armored UMV for 150 feet. And let me tell you what, it was a...
How much does that thing weigh?
Jesus, I want to say it's around anywhere from 11,000 to 15,000 pounds because it's up-armored.
Yeah, it's a lot of weight. So, in powerlifting, you're in the 220 weight class. What were your best lifts so far in your competitions?
Well, my best squat was in 2008, which is 1,003, done at the Georgia State meet. Best bench is 705, done at the SPF Pro-Am, and my best pull was 804, done at the Georgia State meet, and then a best total of 2503.
What's that? Is that the second all-time?
Currently, I've been bumped down the list. I had all time for a few weeks, then I got bumped down to second, now to third. I think I hold the third spot for the all time.
All right. Well, congratulations on that. Let's see. What kind of cardio do you do during the week? A lot of powerlifters, not to bust on powerlifters, but a lot of them don't do much cardio training.
I think the
bigger you get, the stronger you're going to get.
A lot of stigma on it as far as, like, you know, if you – cardio is the root of all evil as far as strength goes, and I don't really necessarily believe that. I believe everything in moderation, just like if you drink alcohol, if it's in moderation, it's not bad for you. I think cardio is the same thing. And it also aids in maintaining a more lean physique, and overall you got better health. You got your VO2 max, and also your heart rate improved.
Yeah, you got to take care of the heart, live longer.
Oh, absolutely.
So, So for you personally, what do you have to do for work for the military? You got to do some conditioning.
Well, for the
Air
Force, we have the 1.5-mile run, waist measurement.
That's every week?
Sit-up. No. Those are biannually assessments.
Okay, so you need to be prepared at all times to pass
those. You know, for that kind of test and stuff, usually I'm pretty much year-round. I can always pass it with flying colors because I stay within my weight standards.
What are the weight standards? If you have a lot of muscle, does that put you over where they want you to be?
It can add to your waist because the waist stock's on you. Now, they've changed the requirements from 32 max to 35. So 3 inches for a guy like me where I used to have to kind of like diet down before the test, now I can just go in as it is. So it helps
based
me
on your height, or what do they do it on?
No. That's the weird thing about it. You figure it'd be based off BMI, but it's not. It's based off just one standard, which I necessarily don't agree with, but I don't make the rules either.
Oh, so they just say everybody, nobody can have bigger than a 32-inch waist?
Yeah, then down the road they try to use BMI, but it's so...
That screws you up.
So
you
much
have any
variance,
muscle?
Yeah, there's so much variance between it, it doesn't really correlate the same.
Yeah, I'm thinking about firing my doctor. I went in for the annual physical. I was like 6 foot, like 235, and he just says, according to the BMI, that I'm extremely obese. I'm like, what are you talking about? I'm like, you're a doctor and you're still going by this BMI? Don't you know?
Well,
it
here's
work
the thing
capacity?
Is they have different ways of doing it. They used to do ways of like measuring the neck and your waist and giving you a BMI, which I don't agree with. I think the only way you can truly do this is by the pinch test of 7 points or also buoyancy test. And
right, even those aren't completely accurate. They
well,
have,
they're all closer than just a neck and waist.
Yeah, we actually got a hold of this thing called the Bod Pod. It's in storage
right
now.
Oh, yeah, I've heard about those.
But we actually bought one, Elliot Hulse, and I for his gym down at Strength Camp, so moving to a bigger gym later in the year, but then we'll be able to set that Bod Pod up. But that thing is about as accurate as you can get. I think it's more accurate than the underwater submersion test.
Yeah, but it's just like super expensive from what I've read and understand about it.
Yeah, the guy was moving, so he had to get rid of it.
Right.
But, yeah, so as far as your weekly training, getting back on track, you're saying you always want to be prepared to pass the tests. But what do you do during the week?
Now, like, keep in mind, though, that was sort of hit or miss. If you're doing heavy legs and stuff, you really got to fine-tune your training. You can't go excessive because, you're trading out slow twitch and fast twitch muscles. And, you know, if you're constantly changing them, then you're pretty much gains are being diminished. So you really got to plan ahead of what you're doing. So if I do a three-lift meet, naturally my cardio is going to be cut back due to impact and, you know, versus slow twitch and fast twitch muscle groups.
Yeah, that makes sense. Now, you did a lot of meets before you were deployed. Now, would you say you're going to have more of like a competition training and off-season training? How would you vary?
Well, I think what I've read about the true greats of the sport is they tend to do about 2 meets a year, and they take their time off versus I'm a little hard-headed, and I had to learn things the hard way, getting little aches and sprains, but I'm really wanting to gear towards an off-season training cycle, you know, leaning up, hardening your body, and making those recoveries that you need. If you got a troubled area and you're continuously training, that's what I did in the past, and it led up to bigger problems. So now I'm kind of in this rehab phase and really assessing myself to what I want to do, what I want to go, and what is my overall health goal besides, you know, lifting heavy weight.
Yeah, so during the off-season, would that be for powerlifting, not training in gear and doing higher reps? You're just talking about not pushing yourself as hard? I mean,
well, yeah, like you said, it depends on what your target audience is. You know, most people know gear and don't know gear. Gear is being aided, you know, as far as apparel, suits, briefs, bench shirts, and versus raw training. I've always been a believer of both. I think both overall added the scheme of things of what your goal is. You have to have a strong core. And also, I'm a very big believer in ab strength because everything around the center of your body and your abs is the biggest part besides your back. You know, if you blow your back, you're pretty much done. But the abs holds everything together. That is truly where your core is at.
So how do you train your abs? Do you think that comes from?
Every day.
or do you think targeting them also, training them and isolating the calves?
You can train your obliques, you can train standard, you can train incline instead of ropes, you know, on the cable cross machine, doing ropes that way by pulling down and working up. Kind of the ropes is nice because it gives you a positive and negative movement if you use control on it versus sit-ups, you're kind of just going up and falling back. I think mixing those and using ab wheels, I can use everything, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I mean, I love doing the ab exercises at the end, but I'm one of the guys that thinks some of the full body compound movements, things like the squat and the deadlift, those are going to work your abs also.
Here's the thing, is traditionally in the past when I'd work out, I'd work one exercise at a time versus when I'm by myself, I compound everything. So if I'm benching, doing curls, triceps, in between that movement, I'm doing another movement with my abs. That way, overall, a three-hour workout realistically becomes more like an hour and a half, hour and 15-minute workout because you're compounding your exercises. And also, too, you're getting a benefit of cardio because you're not getting the rest cycle like you normally would by taking this 1 to 2 minute break between your movement.
Right. So is that kind of like a superset? Would you take three exercises? You go 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, or do you just...
I can just go 1, 2, 1, 2 and alternate.
So you'll take two, go back and forth between them just to cut down your
right.
rest periods and then move on to the next two exercises?
If my main focus is curls that day, I'll work on the machine first, the warm-up, but then I'll do my obliques in between. So in between sets, you're working two main groups. And then if I go to half curl to full range, then I'll start doing anchored abs with, you know, all it means is my foot is anchored to something. That way something I got to hold my feet because most of them are by myself. And that way I'm compounding these workouts and I can get out of the gym on a decent time instead of being in there for 3 hours because I got other things I got to do.
Right. So just for people that are listening that aren't necessarily competing in powerlifting, powerlifters typically train not body parts but by lifts. So if you're training all three lifts, you what, have 3 days in the gym where you're actually training that lift, but then when do you do your auxiliaries? Is that the end of those days, or do you have a separate day for your different exercises or bodybuilding in general?
I consider myself a little odd in that facet because I just don't train powerlift, and I sort of kind of do a hybrid bodybuilding, if you will, because I'm always doing some form of conditioning. Even if I'm going 3 days on bench, deadlift, squat, in between those days is a supplementary day that I'm doing my accessories. Either I missed on that day or I'm picking up cardio on that day. So within a span of a week that I'm doing something, I will at least get cardio once. But right now I'm more like doing it 3 days a week. But in a squat training, just because of being excessive and killing my leg strength, I will still at least do one session a week of cardio. And that could be anywhere from a mile and a half to 3 mile run, elliptical. There's a lot of options you can use.
So typically if you're training for a meet, you'll have one hard or actual cardio session per week.
Yeah, cutting it out towards the end of the week, and then on that final week, and sometimes I even do it 2 weeks out, I'll cut it out all together just to make sure that my legs are fully healed going into it.
But then during the off season, when you're not planning for a meet, that's when you pick up the pace on the cardio some, and that's
absolutely.
For your heart and body composition and stuff?
Yeah, and like I said, you know, people looking at goal of weight loss, you know, depending on your body type, like for me, for instance, when I sleep, I can lose 2 or 3 pounds just sleeping because of body sweat. And then the cardio, if you're like in there doing cardio and you're talking to your buddy, you're not going hard enough. When I'm in there, I'm huffing and puffing for 20 minutes, and I'll lose almost 4 pounds by doing that of water weight.
All right, so you're talking about pretty intense cardio when you do it, but you're talking about
a 20-minute spurt. If you set an elliptical up for 20 minutes and do the settings right, put your body weight right, put your heart rate right, and really stick it out and suck it up, I'm telling you what, you will lose some weight and you will harden up.
Yeah. Well, remember that time you came down to strength camp and we did the tire flip? I mean, we were done in like 20 minutes. And that was an awesome cardio workout.
Yeah, it was. And it's a great supplement to work besides doing elliptical on the running and cardio. You get out there and flip a tire or drag a sled. There's so many different ways of doing it, but, you know, people are guilty of not implementing it.
Now, you've said you've done some swimming, too. Where do you have access to that?
Actually, the swimming, we actually, well, where I live at, a condo I actually own, but the swimming is good for rehab for me because you get the zero gravity of the pool and the water, and it sort of flushes out your body, you know, between your joints and stuff. You get so much buildup of junk and everything within the cartilage. But what it does, allows your body to kind of just be weightless, if you will, and flush some of that junk out.
Yeah, it feels really good rehab. It's like you can...
It's excellent rehab. And like I said, the key is getting blood in those muscle areas. But, you know, it's not just muscles. You got to look at joints, impact areas, your knees, ankles. You know, those are the biggest ones you're looking at as far as doing conditioning and cardio. And even working out, even the squat's going to be one of the biggest ones. And also your elbows and chest. Just getting out and doing almost a form of aquatics, running in the water, is going to allow you to flush that all in and aid in your healing.
So what do you do in the pool? Are you swimming laps, or do you have some kind of routine you're doing?
I just run laps in the pool all the way around for about 20 minutes, and I'll change direction at 10.
Okay, so you run in the pool. So it's what, like three or 4 feet deep or something?
Yeah, well, it works good because when you hit the deep parts of the pool, then you're using your arms to pull you forward, and that's allowing you to use the stretch on your chest.
Does that get tiring?
For me, it really doesn't. I consider it a lot easier than doing a full-blown, you know, run or aquatics, but or elliptical. But the aquatics is designed for is, you know, rehabilitation and give you some benefit of cardio, but it's not going to be intense cardio.
Right.
Not like swimming laps. Swimming laps, that kills me. Usually about four, I'm done.
Yeah. So, I mean, would that be one of your three for the week, or is that another additional one?
That would be an additional one. Right now, I've been doing a three on the elliptical until my ankle heals. Then I'll actually go and cover the ground by running. At least that would be one of my days.
Okay. Now, when do you think it starts negatively impacting strength? Now, you know, guys that want to look good, but they also want to keep getting stronger, you know, for whatever the reason, whether they're competing or not, a lot of us that are on this interview series, we want to get stronger too. We don't want to do so much cardio that we starting to look real good, but have nothing to back it up with. So
yeah, my advice is they want to get out and run and cover some ground. One day a week would be fine. And then you could pick up a supplementary day on this two deep, you know, 1 week is going to be fine. You can get away with two, but I would not do double running. That's when it's going to hit you. But you can hit the elliptical up for maybe 15 minutes to get some extra flushing on your legs, or actually build your VO2 max. But when you start getting 2 days and 3 days of cardio, then, yeah, you're trading muscle groups, you know, slow twitch versus fast twitch.
All right, so we're talking one run, one high-intensity elliptical session at the end of a workout. Then we could also do, you know, the super setting and the compound, you know, things you were talking about just to get your heart rate up during the workout. That'll help on your auxiliary days. Then like a light pool day and something like that. That would be about as much as you can.
You know, and I think because of the experience of the actual athlete himself, you know, you have to know when to back off or when to push through some things. Some days you're not going to feel that great. So when you force yourself to go, you feel great afterwards. And there's sometimes you just need to cut it off.
Right, and it probably depends, too, on how you're eating. I mean, besides doing all this cardio, just nutrition itself.
Well, eating's one facet. I think sleep has the other half of it. You know, eating's half, but sleep is the other half because that's when most of your recovery is going to happen.
How much sleep do you recommend or do you get?
Right now, my sleep has been pretty terrible. I've been going through sinusitis, and it throws my sleep pattern off. But I've been getting by taking valerian and melatonin, and it actually helps me sleep. And it's not addictive. I went through the whole NyQuil thing. I don't advise it because that's epinephrine, and it's hard as hell on your liver.
Yeah. Yeah, sleep's definitely important for recovery. What kind of nutrition tips would you give for people that are trying to lean out but keep their strength? Like a high-protein diet or just common sense stuff like avoid processed foods and sugars?
I don't want to use common sense because, like I said, my nutritional likes and expertise are a little bit different than most. I think it comes with your own likings and what you want to do. But, you know, keep your sugars low. I mean, I'm not a soda person. I don't drink soda. I drink water or diet green tea, you know, and the biggest thing is being a smart shopper and shopping and know what carbs, sugars, carbohydrates really are in your meals. And, you know, once you fine-tune your diet, that's when I think you'll start making substantial gains in lean body mass, is being a healthy conscious on what you're taking in, not just in the gym, but actually, you know, off out of the gym, your recovery, sleeping, and your eating habits. So I think it's a whole threefold process that falls into one. And if one piece is out of whack, then your whole training is going to be out of whack.
For sure. I mean, I'm sure you could design the perfect program for somebody, put it on them. And
well,
then
it depends. Like I said, some people may have a higher metabolism, some may be slow. Some can get away taking more carbs, some are less. I try to relatively stay around low carbs, even though I do have my thin days. But I try to stay low carbs, protein diet within 60 grams per take-in, because your body can only process so much, and having meals spaced out 4 to 5, and that could be throughout the day.
Yeah, that's good advice. I'm just saying, I think that, you know, put somebody on a great training program and then they go and eat crap, or they're eating pizzas or twice as many calories as they
yeah.
eat all the time. It's not going to help what kind of training they're doing. They're just eating too much of the wrong food. So like you said,
well, you may get strong, but you're not going to get that desired lean, hard cut that you're looking for. A pizza diet, yeah, it may be good maybe once every couple of weeks. Or if you're like a triathlete, then you could probably get away with it every day. It's really dependent on what your body's taking in as far as burning fuel. But for the average person, I would highly advise against it.
Yeah, I agree. It's definitely my favorite for a cheat day, though. Right now I'm doing like one cheat day a week and then trying to do protein, high protein with low carbs, low sugar.
And that's kind of
like
what I do. I'll take a protein shake in the morning, or I'll do like cereal with like a scoop on top of protein. So basically I am taking a protein in the morning via shake or on top of cereal.
What about lunch?
Lunch, I actually, you know, I hate to sound like a total vegan on this, but I like spinach wraps and, you know, cold cut meats. And I usually have that with a veggie. And dinner could be anything, you know, relatively normal, nothing outlandish. And then usually at night I have a protein bar or something like that. Or I have like a red wine with glutamine, just something
yeah.
I can kind of settle my stomach with and get some kind of healing aid when my body actually goes into REM.
Do you have any clue how many calories a day you're taking in, or you haven't been using the scales and calculating?
I haven't been using the scale, but I would assume doing full-blown training anywhere from 3,000 to 35.
What about during off-season or when you don't have a meet?
I would probably say 25 to 3.
Yeah, so that's another key point. When you're really going for strength, you got to up the calories, but when you're trying to lose body fat...
Well, I think, like you said, you can gain strength by upping the calories. It just, you know, just keep the fat, saturated fats down, watch your carb intake, and I think most people will be fine.
Yeah. Well, let's switch gears a little bit. We've been talking a lot about body composition, balancing, you know, strength and muscle. Let's talk a little bit about deadlift training. I don't even know if deadlift is your favorite lift. Is that your favorite, or do you like to squat better?
Well, the deadlift seems like the better one than I'm accustomed to. I mean, I don't consider myself much of a bencher due to my long arms, but I can raw bench 500, no problem.
You got an incredible bench, but the other two are just, you know, world class. So it's like you kind of focus in on that 1,000-pound squat and that 800-pound deadlift at 220. I mean, those are probably more impressive than the bench, even though you've got a really good bench too. But which one's your favorite?
I would have to go on a limb and say the deadlift, because it didn't seem like I had to work that hard for it.
When did you start deadlifting? Like, were you naturally a good deadlifter, or is that something?
Not at first, I'd say so, because I first started off pulling sumo, and that lasted for about 3 months, and then one day I decided to convert to conventional, and my conventional was nearly where my sumo was at, just initially switching over, but I had kind of a hybrid sumo. My stance was a little wide, but it was conventional. And then with about 2 year span, I just moved my stance in closer, and I've been hardcore conventional since.
How old were you when you started that?
Probably around 23, but I think a lot of it comes from early back development, because in high school I was big and clean and jerk.
Okay, and what are you now, 30?
32.
32, okay.
So I think I had a really good core build in high school doing, you know, like I said, everybody's lifting raw in school. They're not doing the powerlifting gear. But, you know, I never did deadlifting in high school, but I did clean and jerks. I wasn't much of a squatter in high school, but I would bench, and that seemed to be the two that I would do the most. But when you're young and at that age, you can get away with doing the odd-even technique where you're doing, like, upper-lower. But as soon as you start breaking into those 20s, you know, you got to start spanning it out a little bit.
Yeah. So the 800 deadlift out, that's with the suit, but that's a little different than the other gear. I mean, it just doesn't give you as much carryover.
No, for conventional pullers, they really don't get that kind of advantage being a sumo off the ground. It saves us off the ground, but really a conventional puller is, you know, it's a pretty substantial gauge of strength on that individual. Not knocking people pull sumo, they just have different strengths in different areas.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to put a number on it, but I mean, 30, 60 pounds or something by putting a deadlift suit on it. I mean, it'll vary.
I think some can get a little bit more than that. It just depends on their preferred technique. If they're weaker on the ground or they're stronger on the top, I think every individual is going to be a different case when it comes to that. But for me, I don't know, probably 50 pounds maybe at best.
Yeah. It seems like everybody you talk to, everyone's got a different deadlift program or routine.
Very true, because everybody has different attributes. We're not all the same.
Is there any kind of recommendations or how people can figure out what kind of training would be good for them? Why would people want to train the deadlift that if they haven't been using it yet? If it's not part of their program, why do you think it's a good lift that everybody should do?
Back strength and hamstrings.
Overall back development and hamstrings?
Oh, absolutely. You're going to start getting those humps on your back from doing it. And also you're going to build your hamstrings in a way that's not really being targeted. Like, you can do reverse hamstrings all day, but versus lockout on a deadlift, you know, they're completely different.
Right. So what kind of sets do you recommend to increase the max deadlift?
I have a different physique, so I guess some would consider myself a natural puller, so what I tend to do is if I'm training for a meet, I get a base strength where I'm at. I take a max, and I use percentages in my training, as I've always done. I've really never relied off numbers. And the first week, I'll go off the floor. Second week, I'll get in the rack. Third week, I'll usually follow it with a rack or some kind of light band pull. And by the third week, I'll be back on the floor again. So realistically, I'm pulling off the floor about every 3 weeks. I now pull off the floor every week.
Okay, and this is training it once a week, right?
Right. But like I said, this is also considering I'm doing a three-lift meet. So my other areas of my legs are being picked up on squat days also.
Yeah, you've got that injury now. So would you add in some legs at the end of your deadlift training then, or would you keep legs on a separate day?
Well, if it's an ankle, I mean, it's going to be putting pressure on you, but it's not going to be like squatting if your wide stance and that constant push out towards the heel and the side of your foot and your ankle is taking the brunt of that force. So if you have an ankle injury, I think you still can pull. You have to be sensible about it. So as of right now, I would have to add in those extra leg pieces on my accessory day since I'm not really getting it on my squat right now.
All right, and then so that's the overview. As far as how many reps and sets would you do on a typical workout for these different exercises?
Well, say if I'm taking it like a basic beginner, if I'm taking this raw with no gear, trying to find a base number, I'm going to work myself up and tripled until I start getting around peaking, then I would follow and do ones. So let's say if I'm getting around 80% of my max lift, that's probably going to be either 1 to 2 reps, and once you start crossing into that 90 zone, then you're going to drop it off the singles.
Okay.
Now, if I'm into a meet and I'm looking for a finishing number within my start of training towards the end, I want about 90% for a double. Well, let's say if I can hit anywhere from 730 to 720. If I can get that for a double, then I'm pretty much guaranteed that 800 pull.
Wow. So you'll definitely drop to doubles towards the end, some singles.
I rarely ever pull singles going into a meet. I like to kind of surprise myself. And, you know, I don't try to be flabbergasted by predicting numbers. You just let things happen. But the biggest thing is to get into the meet. Is don't open stupidly. Open something sensible. Then you got two lifts to get another one in.
Right.
I'd rather be known for finishing a meet versus a guy who just shows up and opens dumb.
Yeah, just bombs out, missing three times.
Yeah, I mean, I think consistency to me, regardless of what the number, I give a lot of respect to. And, you know, and I don't really bag multiply and single ply and raw. I think there's great athletes in all. Two that come to mind, I think, have the utmost respect for me is Scott Weech and Ryan Selle. Those, I think they're phenomenal athletes. You know, Scott was a strong guy, doing strongman, raw.
Yeah, he got his pro card.
Yeah, absolutely. And then Ryan, I mean, I think the guy's fucking incredible.
Yeah, he's an amazing lifter. Out at,
and actually, I got a chance to meet him at that Raw Unity meet. Nice, very, very nice guy. Very nice man.
Yeah, what weight class is he in? 220, 242?
No,
maybe?
No, he's a 198er, and he's doing a 530 tufting raw bench.
Yeah, he's insane. He just looks thick. You think he's bigger than he is.
What's even more ridiculous, he's doing a three-lift meet and doing it.
I know. Yeah, he's a talented lifter.
No, he's absolutely talented.
So what are some different weaknesses people have on the deadlifts? I mean, you see it slip out of their hands sometimes. Some people.
Well, if it slips out of your hands, that is your grip, and you need to start doing some grip work. And the one that I like to do, you only have to do it once a week, is sitting at the end of the bench with your arms, palms facing up, end of the bench, taking the bar, and just doing wrist curls. Ever since I've implemented those, I've never dropped the bar. And when I used to first pull, I used to use wrist wraps. Wrist wraps are great for benching and squatting. In my opinion, you have no business in the pull because they can drag on your thighs.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I don't use them.
Okay. Yeah, some people do, not too many.
Like I said, I mean, it may work for them, it doesn't work for me. I don't want any extra drag. Especially, you know, I consider myself weaker at lockout, so I'm already struggling.
Right. What do you do to work lockouts strength?
Pulls. That's why I do the 2 weeks of those, followed by the third week being a pull off the ground.
And then what works off the ground for you, getting that strength off the ground?
I think triples are very good base of strength, and also incorporating the band by half laying the band on the bar, standing in the middle, and use that additional resistance to pull with.
Yeah, it's a good one. Okay, cool, man. I think we covered a lot of ground on this, talking about the deadlift, talking about balancing, you know, strength without letting your body fat get too high.
Yeah, and like I said, I think it's just the athlete doing a true assessment of himself and say, what are my goals? What do I want to accomplish? And in a year from now, where do I want to be? And if I think a person can honestly answer those three, then they're going to have a great training regime, long as they seek advice when needed, know what they're doing, and, you know, give honest feedback to themselves and others. I think things are going to run great.
Yeah, and speaking of seeking advice, if anybody has questions about this interview, Mike is a sponsored lifter that's on the Critical Bench Muscle Forum. So if you want to talk to him or talk to me, we can, you know, look over your routine or see what's going on, answer any questions you have. We're not
like I said, I've been
there.
Guilty in the past of not answering stuff, but then I was also getting bombed by insurgents, so I was less stellar than answering things. But I get there from time to time, but I'm home, I'm safe now, and I'm going to be a lot more active with it.
Well, man, we appreciate that. That's over at criticalbench.com/muscleforum. We'll see you guys over there. Thanks a lot for taking the time to talk with us tonight, Mike. And what day is today? Sunday? I'll see you at the gym
Sunday.
Next week.
Not a problem, Mike. I enjoyed it. Hopefully some folks can benefit from this and seek their way to land a PR. That's all I care about.
Sounds good. All right. I'll talk to you later, Mike. Thanks.
Okay.